Welcome to Microsoft Dev Radio. My name is Andrew Duthie, and with me is Kirup Chinnathambi, Program Manager with the Blend team, who's been doing a couple of demos for us over the last couple of episodes. So we're really, it's great to have you back. And why don't you tell us what you've got up your sleeve for this week?
Absolutely. So in the last couple of demos, we gave you, very narrow slices of what it's like to use Blend for building an application. What I'm going to show you next is really how to use Blend to take advantage of a lot of the features that you will probably run into when you're building your own Windows 8 applications, namely using some of the Windows controls, being able to work with data sources, being able to work with templates, dialing your content. And also, I'm going to show off a really cool feature called Interactive Mode that we didn't get to in the previous demos that really makes some of this designing for applications where your state isn't visible initially really, really easy.
Sounds great. Well, let's get to it.
Okay, so before I get into building the application, I'm going to show you what the final application looks like, just so you guys know what to expect. So there's an application called SwagWatch. It's a play on the words swag and swatch. And you can see, it's basically a set of various types of clothing displayed in a different color. So what I have here is a list view control. I have some data that I'm showing off. And you can see it's very straightforward. I'm just able to see some information. I can right-click on it and see that I have a different look for my check state in this case. And what I want to show you now is how you can use Blend to get all this up and running.
Great.
So in the interest of time, what I've done is I've actually started off the project instead of going completely from scratch. I've actually have a starting point defined where I just added the background and the logo just to get everything up and running. And what I'm going to do next is actually just take it from here, which is start getting some data to show up. So at the beginning, I mentioned that Blend works really well with Visual Studio. But I haven't actually had a chance to show off that integration, so I'm going to do that right now. So what I want to do is I want to add some data, which is going to be essentially a chunk of JavaScript, essentially. And while, as you saw earlier, Blend can do JavaScript well, it doesn't do it well enough. Really, when it comes to JavaScript, you can't really beat Visual Studio. So for this particular case, I'm going to go and open my existing project in Visual Studio and go ahead and add the JavaScript directly using it. So here I have my exact same project, exact same one I have open in Blend, open in Studio as well. And I'm going to go and open default.js. And what I'm going to do now is just add some of my code. I've actually just had it already created. Let me go to my desktop. Let me copy and paste some of my code. I will explain what it is doing. Should I make the font size larger, Andrew?
Yeah, sure. You can just zoom that in a little bit.
All right. Let me go ahead. Yeah, I will zoom in. Better.
Excellent.
I'm just going to paste my little code here. Let's just talk about what exactly I'm doing. So what I'm defining is an array called color data. And what it shows is basically objects that have properties that we will be using shortly. Just remember the property for color for now, and I'll get to some of the other ones later. So I have like an array of objects, all of which have properties. One of it is color, which is nothing more than a hex value specifying the color of what I'm going to be showing. And what I'm doing at the end is wrapping it all into a list object because I want to be able to surface this in a way that I can use one of the Windows controls. So I have a list object that I'm wrapping all of my data into, and I'm calling that final object listViewData.
Okay.
So that's my data source for now. Let me go back into Blend. So I'm in Blend right now. And just to show you that the changes were made in the same project, let me open default.js in Blend. And notice once I've done that, you can see the exact same data that we added in Visual Studio is appearing here as well. Great. So I have some data, and now we need to have the data show up in some form or fashion. So with Windows applications, you have a handful of controls that really do well with data. And the control that I'm going to be using is one that you might have seen in many of the existing Windows applications, is the list view control. So I'm going to go and search for list view. I'm going to go and insert it into my document.
Now, can you hold on just one second? Something I hadn't seen before, when you're in that asset panel with the list view selected, is this list view with grouped sample data and list view with sample data. So if you add those, does it actually give you the sample data out of the box?
It gives you some custom sample data, yes. Yes.
Wow, that's neat.
It does. So yeah, if you're on a starting point, if you have time after, I'll just show you what it looks like. But yeah, it's just basically a list view, but instead of defining a lot of stuff from scratch like I'm going to be showing you now, it gives you a starting point to just have some data that is either just a flat list or with some grouping applied.
Awesome.
Yeah. So I have my list view right now, and let's get some data to show up into it. So I have my list view selected, and what I'm going to do is I want to specify some properties on it. And just like you have with the H1 tag in the first demo, the HTML attributes panel gives you a list of all the properties you can set, including the properties on a control, like list view, that you want to specify. And so for the data, I have the item data source property. And here I'm going to specify the name of the data source. I'm going to say list view data. Let's go ahead and put that in here. List view data dot data source. I'm going to hit enter. And once I've done that, notice that now your list view no longer looks plain, no longer looks very boring, but actually has some data showing up. Now, you can make the case, Andrew, that what I'm seeing now isn't particularly helpful either, but at least it's a step in the right direction. At least we know right. that now I have some data, and each one is now represented as an individual entity inside my list view. At least it's a good starting point to...
Something happened.
Something happened. Exactly. So if you're familiar with data binding and just designing for data in XAML or even in HTML, the way you basically take data and actually make it look nice is by using templates. And in this case, we have an item template property, which I want to set to make my data look the way I want to look. So I'm going to go and hit the drop down and say create new template. And let's go and call this one color template and identify this by class. Why not? I'm going to go and hit OK. So once I've hit OK, now you can see that my UI looks a little different now. Instead of seeing the raw string-based form of the data, I have objects and objects specified. Now, I'm going to select it, but here's what makes this really cool, though. When I select the object-object text now, what you see is not just some raw random identifier, but you actually see some, you actually see a template that I defined, and see actual HTML. And see, once you have actual HTML, you can start going further and making it look the way you would want it to look. So that's right. So that's the state where we are at now. Now we get to modify templates and actually design it the way we would want it to. So what I'm going to do first of all, the size. You can see that this is actually just the bare minimum space needed to display the text that we're showing right now. We want to make it a little bit larger so we can actually show some shirts, show some colors, and all that. So what I'm going to do is first give this item a class value. So I want to make it a little larger. So I'm going to go and say add new class. Let's call this one my color container. And just like before, I want to create this class so I can target it with a style rule. So I'm going to say create style rule targeting this class. I'm going to hit OK. And once I've done that, I'm just going to use this properties panel, make sure that the right style is selected, and start modifying the size of it a bit.
Now, I just noticed that the outline of all of the various items there changed. What's the significance of that?
The significance of that is this. So if I go to the style rules panel, I can see all the styles that are currently defined. When I have color container selected, this highlight means that any element that is currently highlighted in green is currently being affected by this particular style rule. And because we're in a template, and then the template essentially replicates that HTML for every piece of data that you have available, it's applying that particular color container class value to every single element that's currently in my list view. And you can see that the highlight also suddenly being displayed in the live DOM as well.
Great.
Okay, so let's go ahead and specify the width for this. Let's give it a width of 260 pixels. And let's give it a height of 266 pixels. All right, so now things are sized somewhat okay. As you can see right now that the list view has a default size, a size that is not exactly the one that we want. We want it to be a little taller. And, like I mentioned before, like the default size of this list view is actually defined by UIDark.css, which you can see like right here. It's a read-only style. And actually want to modify it. And you'll find yourself doing this quite frequently when you're building an application that goes a little bit beyond the default look and feel that you're given in UIDark.css. So what I want to do next is take a small aside and just make this minor modification where I'm modifying the size of list view in my own style sheet. So as you can see from list view, there's some style classes already provided for me, win list view and win swipeable. So what I want to do is just say, I want to have a copy, I want to have a selector called winListView in my default.css, and I want to be able to, so I can modify it easily. So instead of creating the style rule myself, I'm going to go ahead and create I have existing style rules already specified, so I'm going to create a style rule from element class, and I'm going to call this winListView. And once I've done that, notice what you have done here. In default.css, you have a style selector, empty for now, that actually is called winListView. And you can see that that takes precedent over what I've specified.
So I can UIDark. So you can override what was originally defined.
So if I type in, let's say 80%, for example, now, you'll see that now I can see two rows of content and my list view is more appropriately sized. And everything seems to be going just fine. Okay. So So I have my list view, everything selected. And now let's go back to, you know, continue to make changes to our actual, the content of what we were trying to show off. So I have my, you know, I'm going back to my template, and I currently have my div selected. So right now, everything's showing up, you know, like a black color, which is not exactly the color that we want. And you can easily say that, you know, okay, I want it to be like blue or, sorry, wrong one. Yeah, I can make it yellow, I can make it, you know, whatever color I want. But what I really want to do, though, right, is that I know that each of these objects is bound to a row from the data that I had in my data source. And what I want to do is show, like, the color value that is actually represented in hex format right here. And that's really where data binding comes in. It has a background color property where I can specify a color. But what I want to do is, instead of specifying it inline, like, directly, I'm going to say edit data binding. And the property name that I want to look for is called color. So I'm going to go and type in color, hit OK. And notice now that I've done that, the color is no longer what I have specified in my CSS, but it's actually the color that's specified in the data that is bound to every single object that you have here.
That's
so I'm very
cool.
Able to quickly see that I went from having a data source to having something just showing up from it, and now actually having taking advantage of properties that the data source actually exposes. So now that we're at this state, let me go and just delete object, and just go ahead and insert my image. So I'm going to go to my projects panel, find my shirt. I'm just going to go in and insert it. Sorry, I need to have the insertion point in the right location. Let me go back to where I was. Okay, now, there you go. And, you know, the way this is done is that each image is basically a template, a stencil outline, essentially, where the background seeps through the content of the shirt, but the outside borders are actually opaque. That's why you get the effect that you are able to see right here.
That's very awesome.
Yeah, so there you have
it. I like that a lot.
Shirt added. And, you know, one of the things we mentioned also, we had some text that was going in here. And that's a really cool thing to look at because that's where some of the more advanced layout functionality that you have with CSS3 really comes into play. I think my spyware is out of date. And let me go ahead and just say, in CSS3, what you have is various ways of laying your content out. And if you've done layout in HTML and CSS in the past, it can often not be the most fun, most straightforward things to do. To help with that, especially with applications where layout is very important, it's very crucial to how your application looks, we have Flexbox support and Grid support, both of which have great design functionality in Blend 4. And in this case, I'm just going to show you how the Grid functionality will work. So I have my container selected, and I'm going to go ahead and search for display. And I'm going to say that I want the layout of my container to actually be MS Grid. So brace yourself, Andrew. I'm going to hit MS Grid and notice what happens. Clicking. And, you know, what you see is nothing, you know, as great as what I hyped it out to be. But what you do gain, though, is now the ability to specify grid rows and grid columns, something which you could not have done before. So that's actually really cool. So I'm going to just say I'm going to segment this particular cell into two rows. I'm going to select this here. And once I've done that, of course, you know, the shirt's shrunk a bit. You know, we'll address that shortly. But now I have, like, you know, another column, another row that's been inserted here, where I want to go ahead and specify some text. So I'm going to go ahead and just type in H2, my heading 2 tag. Just drop it in here. You can see that now I have some default text displayed. And just like before, where I have some data, what I want to display, I want to display the value of color text in the case of, in the place of H2. I'm going to go to my HTML attributes panel, where you can see text content being displayed here. So go to edit data binding and type in color text. And once I've done that, you can see that now my text is showing up with the value that is, you know, essentially bound to color property as well. I could have, instead of saying color text, I could have just said color as well, which, you know, no result difference because it's the same exact data.
Right.
All right, Andrew. So let's make some minor tweaks how this text is available and then just quickly wrap up how the shirts all look. So I want to modify the way the text is laid out. So I'm going to give this a class value. Let's just call this one color text. And once I've done this, I'm going to go to my CSS properties panel and say, all right, right now it seems to be arranged at top left corner a little too much. Let's just move it around a little bit. So let me adjust the padding for that. Padding left, let's make it 10 pixels. Let's make the padding top. Let's make this 10 pixels as well. And you can see it, like, you know, better essentially.
Right, a little more breathing room.
Yeah, and here's the nice thing about this, Andrew, is that I'm making minor visual tweaks, but I'm doing it all visually. You know, you asked earlier, you know, what is the advantage of doing some of these things visually as opposed to doing it in Visual Studio or in Notepad. I say this is one major area. I can see that, for example, you know, it is off by a little bit. I can make, you know, very minute, very quick iterative changes without having to spend a lot of time going to F5 and just guessing or hoping that the changes are what it is. I mean, in this case, you know exactly it's going to be 9 pixels, and it's, you can see that represented perfectly here.
Right.
So let's go ahead and set, like, you know, and make the color of it a little bit different. Let's see. H2 tag. And all right, I think this is, you know, let's go ahead and I'm going to set the text style inline, actually. You know, you don't recommend I do that, but, you know, if you really want to, you can specify it inline if you want. So make it 0.9 or make it 90%. And so the last thing I'm going to do, Andrew, is that I can see that now my shirt, you know, it shrunk earlier when I was actually specifying its size. It took up less space because I divided its container into two parts, one of which took up more space than needed. Do what I did before, adding a new class, call this color shirt. And in this case, because this is actually a grid property, I'm just going to go ahead and say, look at my style rules panel. And it seems like my color shirt hasn't been added. Let's see, add new class, call this color shirt, create style rule from my own class, color shirt, yes. And now I'm going to say, go to my grid container, the property that specifies that this needs to take up not one row, but both the rows that's available is MS grid row span. I'm going to go ahead and hit 2. And now we have a look that is almost similar to what I had before. What is missing, though, is that earlier, you know, you saw like a variety of shirts, and I just had one shirt that I'm displaying right now. It's actually a last-minute change I made where I worked with a designer to say, you know, wouldn't it be cool to actually have a variety of shirts? I'm going to show you how easy it is to do that as well. I'm going to copy my shirts folder, paste it into my project. And what the shirts folder does is contains, like, you know, a variety of different kinds of shirts. And if you remember from my data source, what I had is, like, I had the shirt property. Let me, I lost my zoom for a bit. And you can see I have a shirt property here, which has, like, a source of various values. And what I'm going to do is it's actually bound to the location on my project, you know, shirts, which is, you know, kind of tying me into a particular naming convention here, but that works for what we're trying to do. So I have my image selected. I'm going to go to my HTML attributes panel and specify, instead of having this shirt be specified entirely in markup, I'm going to say edit data binding, let's call this one shirt. And once I've done that, you can see that now every single shirt is being displayed. And you can see how data-driven this UI has now become. You know, very little of it is actually defined entirely in my markup. Most of it is actually defined, you know, most of the major functionality is defined using the look and feel. So the last thing I'm going to show you, Andrew, is interactive mode. So let me just run my application right now, just to make sure that, you know, everything looks fine. So what I want to do is, you can see the application running. By default, the list view comes with a lot of functionality, namely for, like, being able to check items. And when I check an item by, you know, in this case, right-clicking my mouse, and I think it's a press and hold on a touch device, you can see that you have a default style that is given for you, a default check style where you have a border and you have a small check mark that is displayed. Now, what I want to do is actually, I want to modify it a bit. I don't want this check mark to be really small. I want it to be much larger, and I don't want this little border there when I, once I get it to the state that I wanted to do it. So the way you would traditionally do it, Andrew, the way you traditionally do it in the tool before Blend, is you'll say, okay, I have a check mark. I'm going to assume there's some style that is modifying it. Let me just go and select my item. Let me see if there's an element here that defines it. You know, in this case, I can see that I have my div, I have my image, but I really don't see anything that seems to be specific to the check mark. Let me go to my style rules and see UI dark. And, you know, I can try to find a check mark style here, but you can see there's a lot of content here. You know, how do I actually get into this state? So what it clearly means, you know, probably means is that the check state is not available for me by default. It's something I need to, you know, interactively get into. I need to interact with my application to be able to get into that state. So the old approach of being able to try to figure out what the style sheet is, overriding it, and getting the state and guessing and trying to do the rinse and repeat approach simply might not work too well. So we looked at this problem and said, okay, so this is not a problem that's going to be going away anytime soon. As applications become more interactive, more reliant on JavaScript for all the visuals, we need a different way that accommodates all kinds of users, all kinds of ways of getting your application into states you don't really have at design time by default. And the feature we came up with is something called interactive mode. So what interactive mode does is, I showed you earlier that we're running all of your live code at the design surface at every given time. Mm-hmm. But what we're doing now is going one step further. We're actually running your entire code, but what we're also doing now is when you're interacting with the application now, you're not selecting it for modification using our UI. You're interacting with it as if you would, as you would if you were interacting with the application, as if it were running. So I'm going to go ahead and right-click on my on my items here, you can see that the checkmark style has appeared. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to exit interactive mode. When I exit interactive mode, notice the state my application is in right now. It is not in the state that it was in when I had it earlier, but it's in the state that I had it in as I was finishing up interacting with it in interactive mode itself. So now right. I can actually more predictively select the item and say, okay, I see it right now. I can see that there is there's a checkmark style right here. And you can see that these were all created by JavaScript. You can see that there's a little lightning bolt indicating that this element did not exist at design time. It only existed at runtime. So even if my earlier approach of trying to hunt down the item in my live DOM, it would not have worked because a JavaScript for bringing this up here would not have run. So now I have a very easy way of very predictably being able to get to a state where I can modify this look that's only available at runtime. So I'm going to select my check mark. So the checkmark is an interesting one because while it looks like it's an image, you'll find a lot of the various visuals in Windows, in the Windows 8 applications, are actually defined as fonts, or defined as characters as fonts. So what you have here is a checkmark that is actually a character in a particular font that you're dealing with. So I'm going to go ahead and say, let's go ahead and change that. So I'm going to say, create style rule from element class, when selecting checkmark. The reason I'm doing this, Andrew, is because this style rule is defined in UI.css, which is read-only. I want to print this style essentially into my own so I can override it. So I'm going to create a style rule called WinSelection checkmark. And let's go ahead and just modify the size of it. And because I mentioned it is actually a font, I go to font size and specify the size that I want. Let's go ahead and say 150 pixels. Yeah, so now you can see that, you know, now this particular item is much larger. And the last thing is like, I want this little, you know, the border now, the top right corner to no longer be there. So I'm going to go ahead and remove that. So let's see, I have this selected and I'm trying to select that here and I cannot select it. And part of the reason is that the check mark currently has focus, currently is occluding any selection to go behind it. And that's where some of the design time functionality we have for maintaining the visibility and selection of an item comes into play. So what we have in the live DOM is to lock the selection of an item. So in a case like this where I want to be able to select something behind it but I cannot, I can just say lock this so you cannot select it. And now I can no longer check the check mark, but I can actually select the top right corner, the little triangle that goes there. And just like before, I'm going to say create a style rule based on this particular background, select that, and maybe modify the display a bit to say I don't want it to show up at all, none. And so now if I hit F5 just for kicks, you know, I don't have to do this, but just as a sanity check, I'm going to F5, I can right click. I notice that now all the check state for my items is exactly in the way I would have wanted to. And the best part of it was very predictable. It was very productive for me to use interactive mode and blend to do this, as opposed to doing an old approach where I'm actually guessing at what kind of changes I would need to make and having to constantly hit F5 and make sure that the pixel positioning of items is just right. Now, it's a really major time-saving feature, one that really accommodates any kind of coding style that you may have. As long as you can get to that state, you know, using simple interactions with your application, you can get into it in Blend and then design from it from there.
Sweet.
That's all I have for now, Andrew. That's my, you know, whirlwind tour of building a Windows 8 application.
Awesome.
Blend and Visual Studio.
Well, Karuba, that was a great demo, and in fact, I have a confession to make. I think I'm going to find myself bookmarking this show because I think I'm going to be watching it over and over again so that I can get every ounce of goodness out of some of those great demos. The interactive mode stuff, I've played with it a little bit before, but I mean, you actually showed me several things that I didn't even know. A lot of the data binding stuff, the visual support for it in Blend is even better than I realized. So I'm looking forward to going back after some of my apps that I've been working on and playing with some of these features. That's great stuff.
Glad you found it useful, Andrew.
So I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us. So we'll hopefully maybe catch up with you again in the future. But again, thanks for watching, and we'll be back next time.
Sounds good, Andrew. Get some bubble tea in the meantime.